During the Switch Pivot or Quit chat, we talked to women that have successfully navigated through some of the plot twist years of life and are eager to share their stories and what they've learned in the hopes of inspiring, teaching, or making even the slightest impact by candidly owning their truth. Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch Pivot or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist years as your chief encourager and host of the Switch Pivot or Quit podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes if you have enjoyed listening to this podcast so far. And check out switchpivotorquit.com for even more personal and professional development resources. But for now, just sit back, open your mind, and enjoy the show. On today's show, we're chatting with Kate Kordsmeyer. Kate is a professional journalist turned real food blogger after her own chronic health issues were finally healed with food and natural remedies. She's the founder of Root and Revel, a food and wellness site delivering inspiration to help people live naturally without sacrifice. After reversing her PCOS and leaky gut with food and holistic remedies, absolutely no prescriptions, she started Root and Revel to share what she's learned on this incredible journey. Kate is one of the bloggers brave enough to publish monthly income reports to help educate and inspire others. We're going to talk to Kate about that. So aspiring bloggers, mothers, foodies, and business owners, grab your pen and paper because we get down and dirty in this episode. Kate is going to dish on all the inside scoop on what she's learned making a living from being a full-time blogger and so much more. She just really shared a lot with us on this episode, and I absolutely appreciate her for it. We even got down to the fact that she is pregnant right now. She is with child, expecting, I think, in about 2 weeks, and she was told before changing her diet and lifestyle, she was told that she would have a hard time conceiving. So Kate is going to share with us so much more about her journey, all the things that she's learned from business to her personal life, and this is definitely a must-listen episode. So I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and dive into this chat. I'm excited for this. So in your early years, what was your very first job? If you think back to maybe the first thing that you got paid to do, I'd love to hear about that.
Well, let's see. If we're talking like the very first thing I got paid to do, it was probably babysitting, you know, in the neighborhood. I feel like that started when I was probably 12. I don't know. Now looking back on it, I'm like, who would have trusted me with their child? I was such a child myself, but I guess, you know, you kind of start as like mother's helper and then, but my first real job, let's see, I had a lot of jobs. Like I was a receptionist at a spa. I worked at Starbucks in college. I pretty much have always had a job though, since I was 12 years old. So, there was a lot of kind of like receptionist assistant type, admin jobs in the beginning there. And then, you know, I was a waitress at a country club, in high school. So yeah, kind of run the gamut, but just the typical teenage jobs, I'd say.
Yeah. I love it. That, you know what, to me, like even the 12-year-old babysitter, like we look at that now, like, oh my gosh, who would have trusted a 12-year-old with their child? But I think, you know, times were probably a little bit different, less ability for people to like put it on social media that they were home alone, come over, have a party, you know, things like that. So, you know, people probably had a little bit more security in feeling like they could
trusted 8-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. And there was no social media, you know, exactly. It was definitely a different time. So
yeah,
that's true.
It seems like you got started with responsibility early, which is pretty freaking awesome. So as you know, on this podcast, we talk all about the switch, pivot, or quit experience, and you've had your own SBQ experience. So I'd love for you to start us off by sharing a little bit about your background and sort of where you are now.
Yeah, sure. So I ended up going to journalism school in college. That was my major. And when I was there, so I always knew I wanted to be a writer. Journalism seemed like the best fit. And when I was there, I ended up interning with a freelance writer who lived in my college town, but did a lot of work for national magazines. And she really showed me what it meant to be freelance and that it was an actual job, and she made great money and, you know, was really happy, and she was her own boss. So in college, I was like, well, that's obviously what I'm going to do. That sounds perfect.
Right.
But, you know, then I graduated and all my friends got real jobs and had insurance and benefits and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I should probably do that. So I ended up getting a job as a copywriter for Neiman Marcus. Mm-hmm. And I moved to Dallas and worked out of their corporate office. And nothing against the company itself, but it was a horrible job for me. I was really unhappy there. And so I ended up quitting after about, I think I started in July, and I quit just before Thanksgiving. So I did not last very long. And I quit to pursue freelance full time.
Really?
And yeah. And it was really a crazy thing because this was 2010. So we were still recovering from the recession, and everybody was like, you're so lucky to have a job right now. How could you quit? What does freelance even mean? You know, it was, I really had the support of nobody. And so that made it really tough, but it also really motivated me to kind of prove everybody wrong and like, no, this is real. I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I did. And so I was able to double my income that I was making at Neiman's within, I think, four to six months. So I have been freelance ever since. And that has sort of evolved to be, for a long time, it was just that I wrote for magazines and newspapers. I focused on food and travel topics. And so it was literally my job to go around the world and report on the most delicious food and the best hotels. And it was a very perk heavy job, so to speak. And it was awesome. I loved it until I didn't. You know, that's just kind of how life works. And to make a long story short, there were a lot of different reasons, but I decided to start my own blog back at the end of 2015. Something I never thought I would do. Mm-hmm. And now I've been full-time with that for almost 2 years, and I don't really freelance for magazines anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, now I am a full-time blogger.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. That's pretty gutsy of you to just say, hey, I'm going to do this freelance thing so early in my career. But I get it because you had already had the introduction. So it wasn't like the world of freelance was unfamiliar to you. So that makes sense. What was your, this is just a side question. What was your favorite destination when you were traveling all around the world, getting to eat and have all these wonderful food experiences? Yeah. What was like your favorite country or city?
You know, it's so tough because of course, I mean, I love traveling. And so every place had its own unique aspects that I loved. But I think when I went to Istanbul in probably like 2012, I want to say, and that was just the most incredible experience I've ever had. The food was phenomenal. And it was just such a different place. You know, the culture is just so different there. So I really enjoyed that trip a lot. And then on the flip side, kind of a more classic place, I did a trip to Bordeaux in France and did wine country there and went to some of the most famous vineyards in the world and, you know, mm-hmm. drank $800 glasses of wine. And it was, yeah, not something I do in my everyday life ever. So that was like a really, you know, and French food and is obviously amazing. It was like one of those things where by the end of the trip, I was like, no more foie gras and red wine. And I, you know, who would ever think you would get to a point that you would say that?
But exactly. I was going to say, you can't even imagine that you would need to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So that was a really fun trip too, though. I mean, there were so many and there was a lot of places even just domestically, like that I hadn't spent any time in the Pacific Northwest or mm-hmm. even places that you just wouldn't expect. I lived in DC for a while. And so we did a lot of trips like around Maryland and mm-hmm. Virginia and, you know, places that I had, you know, admittedly low expectations about and ended up loving. So
yeah.
Our own country has a lot of, you know, amazing destinations too.
Definitely does. So all of this, you know, awesome experience that you had, what made you say like, I'm over this, or this is no longer working for me? Sort of what was the pull that made you decide to go into blogging for yourself?
Yeah. Well, like I said, it was a lot of different things. It was kind of the perfect storm, honestly. The biggest thing I would say is probably that I started having a lot of health issues. Mm-hmm. And as I started treating those holistically, I really changed a lot about my diet and lifestyle, and it made it really hard to eat and travel the way that I had been.
Okay.
So that was probably the main reason. I also was feeling frustrated with just with the way freelancing was kind of starting to go, at least for me. You know, I had moved back to Atlanta where I'm from originally, from DC, and the market here was just really different. I wasn't getting as much work. I was frustrated that I was pitching all of these ideas to editors that I thought were such great stories and nobody was biting. And so I felt like I was losing a lot of control. I wasn't able to write about what I really wanted to, and I wanted some of that control back and mm-hmm. to feel like I was telling the stories that were important to me and what I was passionate about.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, and there was a lot of other reasons, you know, I was getting older. I got married, we bought a house. I was kind of becoming a little more of a homebody, and traveling had, I mean, I was on the road so much and I just sort of started getting sick of it and feeling like, I just want to be home for a little bit. And, so there was a lot of things going on, but it all kind of came together, came to a head and really made me say, I'm going to try something else. And I didn't go cold turkey. You know, I started the blog and was still freelancing, I would say at least part-time, if not, you know, 75% of the time. And then just little by little, I kept cutting back on freelancing, spending more time on the blog until it got to a point where I felt like, I don't need this freelance income anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm making enough from the blog. And I feel like if I devote even more time to it, I can increase that income even more. And so, in January 2017 is when I went full-time with the blog.
Wow. So I'm imagining that because of the blogging space, and blogging obviously entails a lot of writing, you are able to transfer some of the skills that you had gained in the freelance and journalism world into working with your blog. How did that sort of work for you? Was it different for you? Did you have to like write different? Did you have to think different or approach things different with the blog versus what you were doing in the freelance space?
Yeah, no, 100%. You're right that there were a lot of skills that I had learned over the last 8 years that really helped me come, you know, I feel like I wasn't just starting at square one with the blog. Mm-hmm. You know, I understood how to research and report a story. I knew how to interview people. I knew how to connect with brands and publicists and that kind of thing. So I had a lot of those skills already ingrained in me. So that was really helpful. And then the things that were different were refreshingly different. Like I said, I had that control where I said, this is what I want to write about. And I don't have to convince anybody that we should do it. I can just do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was freelancing, I rarely did first person articles. It was, you know, it wasn't about me. It was about the restaurant or the chef or whomever the story was about. So the thing that was most different, I would say, with blogging is that I was having to insert my own voice into it more and tell more of my own story. But I really enjoyed that. It was kind of nice to start doing that. And I felt like I had something to share with the health journey I had been on. So it made sense to kind of insert myself into the writing.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. So for people that think working for yourself is all peachy and fun and all this freedom and everything, can you share one bit of reality that might make them think twice about that perception?
You have no benefits. There's no 401k match. There's no paid vacation. There's no paid sick days. There's no health insurance.
Does that give you anxiety?
No, it really, for the most part, it doesn't. You know, I was lucky that I was able to find a good health insurance policy early on. And so I wasn't paying any more for health insurance than I would have, when I was at Neiman's, you know, when my employer was, you know, quote, giving it to me, but you're still paying for it. So, So that part wasn't as stressful to me. I mean, I'm my personality type is very well suited for entrepreneurship in that I'm very self-motivated. I'm very disciplined, just naturally. So, you know, people always say like, oh, if I was at home, I could never get myself to work. And I never really had a problem with that. I just was like, well, I want to work and I'm passionate about this. And so it's no, you know, I could never, I had a hard time getting myself to go to an office and work for somebody else.
Right.
So yeah, but of course there are times like I'm actually 2 weeks away from my due date, with my first child right now.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks. So
final stretch here.
Yes, we are. And, self-employed maternity leave is not a thing. So, you know, that's something that has some pros and cons as well. And it has stressed me out a little bit because even though it's wonderful that I don't have to ask anybody permission and I can take as long as I want and, you know, there's more freedom and flexibility there, it's also all on me. And, you know, it's a lot of mental labor just trying to figure out how long should I take and what is the right answer and how am I going to juggle working from home for myself and caring for a baby?
You know, it's very interesting that you say that too, because I have another friend who is an entrepreneur and she's technically on maternity leave still, but she's working still, you know, because like it's, and there, I actually have two friends who said the same thing because you kind of can't get away from it. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, or if you think I'm wrong, you haven't quite entered the territory exactly yet. But
yeah,
I think that when you're a self-motivated person, that also makes it hard to stay away from your business because something in you is probably saying, oh, do this. Did you remember to do that? Oh, you might want to make sure that you know, instead of just like kicking your feet up and relaxing, like some people might be more inclined
Right. Yeah. And that extends to, you know, things outside of maternity leave too, just like vacation, where I've always said, again, it's a pro and con situation because I can take as much vacation as I want. And I've been able to travel personally, not professionally, so much more than most of my friends that have traditional jobs where you get, you know, a standard 2 weeks or something like that. Or even from my husband who works for a, you know, major company and has more of a corporate lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And so it's been wonderful, but I've often had to work on those vacations as well because I can't just step away. And, you know, I sometimes will be jealous at my husband when we go on a trip. He's off. There's no checking email. There's no checking in with people there. You know, it's just like
vacation is vacation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's, you know, I think it just is a personal preference. And, for me, I feel like I still end up, well, I was going to say some days I feel like I work more than he does. And then other days I feel like Mm-hmm. No, it was really nice. I had so much more flexibility. I didn't have to, you know, when you work in an office environment, I have found and heard from a lot of my friends that do, there's a lot of wasted time.
Yes. Yes.
And there's not as much, yeah, there's not as much when you're working for yourself. At least if you are, you know, focused and disciplined, certainly I've wasted plenty of time goofing around on the internet, but there's not a lot of unnecessary meetings and conference calls and, you know, just like water cooler chat and commuting time and that sort of thing. So I feel like you kind of make up for it.
Yeah. What are a few characteristics that you think entrepreneurial type of people do have or maybe should have? And I ask that, let me give you a little context, because a lot of people that are listening to this podcast, a lot of our ladies, they may be in a place of transition and trying to transition from a full-time, you know, corporate career into doing their own thing and working for themselves. But I'd love for you to share what you think some of those maybe traits or personality traits or characteristics are, so that, you know, they can kind of think of those things and then think realistically about themselves and how they show up. Because one of the things that I tend to notice is that obviously there's this huge trend. Everyone wants to be an entrepreneur and work for themselves, right? It seems and feels like it's glamorous and you'd much rather be doing that than sitting at your desk when you're looking, scrolling through Instagram and looking at people's pictures. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a certain amount of realistic expectation and understanding that people should have for themselves to know if you can really do this, you know,
or
if it's worth really trying to put yourself to the test to do this. So what are your thoughts on like maybe some of the characteristics someone should have?
No, that's such a good question, because I don't feel like one is better than the other in terms of personality traits. It's just that one is maybe better suited for corporate life versus entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of characteristics that I think are important to be a successful entrepreneur. One of them, like we talked about, is just being somebody that is self-motivated and has that discipline sort of ingrained in their personality. But the other things I would say is, A, to be fearless. I think if you are too afraid of failure, and obviously we're all a little afraid at least of failing, but if you let that take over too much, you'll never succeed, because A, you probably won't even try out of fear that if you try, you could fail. And so let's just not try. Mm-hmm. And you might just not take some of the important risks that could really benefit your business. So I think fearlessness is good. I think ability to handle rejection is really important. Mm-hmm. You know, both when I was freelancing and now with the blog, I get turned down all the time, and it can be really easy to be defeated by that and to start taking it personally and feeling like, oh, what's wrong with me? Nobody wants to work with me, or nobody likes my ideas. And what I really came to realize is that a lot of entrepreneurship is sales and selling yourself to clients or customers. And you really can't take it personally. It is just business. And a lot of times when people are saying no, they're not saying, no, you suck, I hate you. They're saying, not right now. It's not the right time. It's not the right fit. It's not, you know, it's not about you for usually. It's about something on their end or the fit. Mm-hmm. And so I think, I know a lot of people, especially freelance, because you're pitching story ideas to editors all the time. And I talk with a lot of people that say, I'm just so discouraged. You know, everybody keeps saying no, I feel like such a loser. And I'm like, you can't give in to that feeling of defeat. You just have to keep going. And so I think, having thick skin is important. I would say being organized also. There's so much, you're wearing so many different hats as an entrepreneur. You know, I'm my accountant, and I'm the creative person behind it, and I have to manage all of the contracts and, you know, business development and advertising and social media. And like,
right.
You can start outsourcing and hiring out help and building a team, of course, but a lot of times in the beginning, it's just you. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't have spreadsheets, I don't think I could make it.
I'm excited to be back. Okay, you guys probably never really knew that I was away, but I teamed up with Mitsubishi for a little family getaway. We drove the Mitsubishi Outlander from California to Nevada for the barbecue festival in Reno. This is only my second trip to Reno and first to the barbecue festival and first taking the Outlander on a family trip. But it was the perfect, perfect vehicle and we loved it. The road to Reno is really actually beautiful. There's all these forest-lined highways with lakes and streams along the side of them. So it's very, very picturesque and it's high elevation and even higher mountains. And the Outlander navigated it all like a champ. Once we finally got to the festival, there was about 20 of us that went, 20 or 25 of us that went in total. So you can just imagine the fun and chaos and just laughs and everything that we had. But once we actually got there, I ate everything in sight, from roasted corn to half a dozen types of barbecue from all these different places all over the world. And I enjoyed every single bite. Oh, yeah. Plus the family time. But anyway, I hope that you are enjoying wrapping up your summer. And I am thankful for Mitsubishi for partnering with me on this little adventure. Drive Mitsubishi.
You touched on something that I think is very, very crucial, because it's something that you don't think about every day, sales, in terms of entrepreneurship. A lot of people know sales as a very specific career. And quite honestly, many people avoid sales. You know, they think you have to have a certain personality to succeed in sales, especially in the corporate world. So what have you learned about sales, or maybe what are some of the tools or tips that serve you well in navigating being a saleswoman within your business?
Right. So yeah, great question. There's a few things that come to mind. The first is kind of just the concept of fake it till you make it. You just have to have confidence in yourself. And just the thing that that really resonates with me and that has proven true for everything in my life is you have to ask for what you want. And if you don't, you're never going to get it. Nobody is going to just magically find you and give and offer you mm-hmm. what you want. You have to ask for it. Mm-hmm. And that can be really scary for people. But what I end up telling so many of my coaching clients is, what is the worst that could happen? The worst thing that could possibly happen is they would say, no, thanks.
Right.
Nobody is going to go off on you. Nobody's going to get mad at you. Nobody's going to insult you. The worst that could happen is they say, no, thanks. It's not the right fit. Mm-hmm. And then you're right where you started. So you're not worse for the wear. And maybe you even get some good feedback about how you could improve for the next pitch.
Right.
But yeah, I think everything I've ever gotten, and I'll have people say, oh my gosh, like, how did you ever get started writing for Travel and Leisure? You know, that's such a huge publication. I say, I asked them if I could write for them. It really is that simple. How did you get XYZ to sponsor this post? I asked them if they would sponsor it. Mm-hmm. you know, I'm like, it's not rocket science. There's no big secret. It's just that you have to ask and realize that nothing bad is going to happen if you do. The worst is that you'll be where you were before you asked.
Yeah. Brittany Hennessy just released this book called Influencer. And it's all the buzz. If you guys don't know, I reviewed it in a book chat. And she mentioned in that book that a lot of these influencers, and she largely deals with influencers who have on Instagram maybe like 100,000 followers mm-hmm. or more. And she was saying that what you don't realize is a lot of these influencers have to go out and pitch to get these brand deals and sponsorships and partnerships that they have. And I was really appreciative of her for making that point and saying that, because I think a lot of people who have aspirations of getting to that level to work with big name partners or to get big checks from brands, they think that a lot of this stuff is just coming to these influencers because of their established status. And you just mentioned, you know, oh, I got this sponsorship because I asked, you know, I pitched them. Right. So what are some of your maybe like tips for pitching brands? And I guess this question is twofold. Maybe tips for pitching brands, and then where do you start? When you say, I want to work with, I'm just throwing out stuff here, but I want to work with Clorox, what would be the first thing that you would do to try and establish a relationship or make the ask to work with Clorox?
Yeah, gosh, you have so many good questions. Yeah. So I keep saying 100%. Yes, you're right. I totally agree that, and with Brittany's book, I just looked it up. I hadn't heard of this before, but I'm going to have to read it now.
Awesome.
Yeah. First of all, nobody started out with 100,000 followers. Mm-hmm. They started out with zero, just like you and me, and mm-hmm. they built it up. And so maybe once they have 100,000 followers, you know, I don't have 100. I have, I think, 50-something thousand followers on Instagram. But
that's still better than a lot. So yeah, you're still right there with them.
But in the beginning, I was having to ask for every single job that I got. Mm. Now, once you've established some credibility and brands see you working with other brands and see what you can do, then yeah, people do start coming to you. But in the beginning, nobody's just coming to you. You are having to seek it out. Mm. So then to answer your question, let's say I want to work with Clorox. There's a few things that I would do to start. And the first is just figuring out who would I pitch. And so I have a very, it's become quite an art, I guess, of finding who the appropriate person is to talk to. Mm-hmm. And you can start by just like sending them a DM on Instagram if that's where you're wanting to do work for them, and saying like, hey, I'd love to work with you. Who's the best person to chat with? You know, could you give me an email address and I could send you my media kit or something like that? But I have found that it's email is a better way to communicate with these people. And so I start by going to the brand's website and seeing if I can figure out who manages either their public relations, their advertising. I mean, sometimes they even have like influencer managers, because it is such a huge piece of the advertising puzzle now for brands, is like working with influencers. So mm-hmm. trying to figure out who that person is. And I have a few tools that I use to help me find email addresses, and, you know, LinkedIn is part of the strategy. And sometimes it's super easy and brands make it really obvious who the person to contact is. And sometimes it's really hidden and you have to do a lot of digging. Mm. But the first step is figuring out who would I even pitch. Mm-hmm. And then the second step is actually pitching them. And the biggest thing I have found to get a yes is that you're not pitching them, oh my gosh, I'm such a huge fan of your brand. Mm-hmm. I just love Clorox. I'd love to work with you. That's all about you. They don't give a shit about you.
Right.
What you need to do is tell them what you can do for them. Why, what value are you going to provide Clorox by partnering with them? Why should they care about you? Why should they give you even a dollar to help them promote their brand? Mm. So it's really about positioning yourself as, if you work with me, here's what I can do for you. Mm-hmm. And that's the quickest way to get a yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes absolute sense. And I hope that that's resonating with some people, because a lot of it is not just, you know, trying to sell yourself in a way that, hey, look at me, I'm so great. It's like, look at what we could do together. So yeah, I love that. Perfect.
Yeah.
So So you have, you've been in this space for a while now, and I noticed in browsing through your blog that you started doing these income reports.
Yeah.
And those are interesting. Those are interesting. I don't know how fun it is for you, but it's kind of fun to like read and see what's going on. Because there's a lot of people who are, let's say, like we said before, you know, in this entrepreneurial lifestyle and they're presenting something online, but you don't really know what kind of money they're making. You don't know how they're making their money. So there's a lot of transparency with you doing the income reports. And I think that's very gutsy of you. So kudos to you.
Thank you. Yeah. It's definitely the scariest thing I do is like sharing that kind of information and, you know, money obviously can be a really sensitive topic with people. And I never want it to come across as like, I'm doing this post to brag about how well I'm doing. And really the reason I started it is because I read other bloggers' income reports and they were so helpful to me. First, in convincing me to even start a blog in the first place. Without reading Pinch of Yum's income reports, I never would have started a blog. So it totally changed my life. Yeah. So I really wanted to give back in that way. You know, I started getting a lot of emails and messages from people asking for my advice. How do you do this? I want to do what you do. Or, you know, and I thought, well, this could be a good way to give back and be transparent with these people and answer the questions that I'm getting all the time. And hopefully help other people create their own successful blogs or online businesses. And so, yeah, it really is meant to help others. And hopefully that's what it's doing. But it's, like I said, certainly the scariest thing I post because you never know what kind of reaction you're going to get from people when you share money information. Yeah. And I didn't want to piss off my readers that were there for food and wellness tips. And then here I am saying, meanwhile, I'm making money off of you. And, you know, maybe that would rub people the wrong way.
Yeah.
but ultimately, you know, I just think, well, it's a business. Nobody's really doing this out of the goodness of their heart. It's my job. And yeah.
I think that's one of the pieces that is still left to sort of have some room to grow for education purposes for the general public, because a lot of people look at content creators and they think it's great. They want to consume the content, but they don't quite make the connection that if this person is creating all of this content for you, they have to get paid somehow. They can't just sit around their house or, you know, wherever, especially if they have an office or something, and create all this beautiful content for you. You consume it, you pay nothing, it's all for free, and then the world just keeps going around. Like, that's
right.
Not how it works.
So true.
You know, so I think there's still this learning curve where people who consume the content still have to catch up with the idea that somebody has to pay for this. So when you see a sponsored post or a sponsored ad or something, that means that that's how you're able to see half of the stuff that is created because someone is paying for it and it's just not you.
Right. It's like either you can pay me and everything will be blocked until you pay a subscription fee, or you can do nothing and just know, you know, you just, a lot of influencers aren't as, I don't know the best way to say it, but I feel like I really try to be super authentic and only partner with brands that are truly a fit. And we are very clean, non-toxic, organic lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of brands that I have to turn down because they contain ingredients that don't fit with the mission that we're promoting, or their, you know, business practices or the sustainability of their products are not in line with our mission. And so I hope that the way that people become okay with like, okay, yeah, it's a sponsored post is like, but it's really not any different from any of the other posts.
Right.
Like that it fits in super well with the content. It's something that I was going to write anyway. And something that I wanted to promote anyway, something I personally use and love. And it just happens to be that the brand helped me out and partnered with me so that I could afford to provide free, like you said, I can afford to provide free content to everybody because I have brand partners.
Yeah. And I think that's something that unfortunately is getting lost, some of the integrity with the presentation of working with brands and sponsored things, because, you know, I think there was just like this excitement that happened once people realized that this was a thing, you know, all of these people who were creating content just for the love of it because they wanted to do it. Then all these brands started coming out of nowhere, throwing money at them and very substantial amounts of money. And then naturally we're all human. You want to make more money. So it starts feeling good and starts looking good. And you get sucked into this like vortex of more, 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 instead of really keeping what your purpose and what you started with top of mind and at the forefront so that it could remain authentic throughout. Because I'm sure that there's a lot of people who are doing things just based off the dollar now and not necessarily things that they would have done when they first got started, you know, and, and really a lot of the like OG people who, you know, they didn't get started just because of the potential of making
money.
That's a whole new crop of people as well. But when you have to make like some big decisions, you know, like you just mentioned, there's sometimes there's brands that you have to pass and you have to not partner with because of the integrity of your brand. When you're faced with those times where you're making a big decision, and it could be work related, it could be personal, it could be brand related, it could not be. When you're faced with those times, what are some of the things that you find yourself doing to sort of work through making big decisions?
Yeah, great question again. I think the biggest thing that I go back to is thinking about my why. So why did I start this business or this blog in the first place? What is my ultimate goal? What am I trying to accomplish with it? And then saying, so does this opportunity fit with that? So, you know, for example, if I was approached by Clorox, which in a way would be awesome because I'm sure Clorox has a ginormous budget and could pay me lots of money. If I got approached by them, I would say, well, wait a second. My why is that I'm trying to get people to detox their lives, to get rid of these harmful chemicals in their homes and in their food and in their personal care products and stuff. So does working with Clorox make sense? Absolutely not.
Right.
So I think just coming back to the why, and like you said, it's not just for brands. It could be other things. Like actually, Instagram is a great example. Obviously, I am on Instagram and it is a very small part of my business model. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to get caught up in like, oh man, this person has, you know, 200,000 followers, or there must be making so much money from Instagram or from this partnership or whatever. Mm-hmm. And wanting that yourself. But for me, I realize being an Instagram influencer is not my why. My why is to help people reverse their health issues. Mm-hmm. And though Instagram could be a platform to help me do that, ultimately, I find that long form content that really digs into these health issues and really helps people in a super tangible way that I can't do in just like a short Instagram caption. That's my why. So even though it's not like, should I partner with this brand? It's, should I spend a lot of time and energy on Instagram? And I just decided, no, I'm not going to put my time and energy there because it doesn't fit with my why.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, we've talked a lot about the business side of things. I want to get into a little bit of the content and the sort of shift for you in your life with creating your blog, Root and Revel, and just sort of like talk to us a little bit about what that experience was like when you were having these health issues and you started to explore what your options could be in terms of changing your diet to basically help you out for your health. You know, what was that? What was that experience like? And sort of what maybe like triggered for you that said, you know, I really need to share this with other people.
Mm-hmm. So I have never been like a crunchy, you know, holistic kind of person prior to having these health issues. I was very, you know, American Western medicine, like give me a pill and take my problems away. And like, you know, the easiest path of least resistance, was the way I approached my health for a long time. And I was lucky in that you know, I always was on the thinner side and generally thought I was healthy. But I started having a lot of digestion and hormonal issues. And after seeing a lot of different conventional doctors about it and trying a lot of different things, whether it was prescription medication, I mean, I had a colonoscopy when I was 27, you know, just trying a lot of things that were what conventional Western medicine said, this is what you should do. And none of them worked. I was kind of just at the end of my rope and I thought, oh my gosh, I feel like I've tried everything. Nothing's working. What can I do? And I came across this book called Woman Code, and it really talked and explained how the female body and our hormones work, and how what affects those hormones and how those hormones then affect other things outside of like your period, that it's not just, you know, your menstrual cycle is hormone related. Everything is your mood, your energy levels, your digestion, you know, all of these things. So it really opened my eyes. And she talks a lot about using food and supplements to balance your hormones. And so I started kind of following some of her advice. I found a holistic doctor near me in Atlanta. She really was the first doctor that actually listened to me. And instead of just prescribing me something, after 5 minutes of talking, she, you know, we spent a few hours together and we ran a lot of different tests and we looked at different hormone levels and different vitamin levels and things going on in my body and came up with a much more comprehensive treatment plan than just take this expensive pill. And I started seeing these incredible results and was finally feeling better for the first time in my life. And so I was fully converted into like, oh my gosh, I don't know, how could I have been a food writer for all this time and not realized what an impact food makes in our body? So I felt kind of dumb also for just like,
but that's not the way we're raised though. It's just not the way that we're taught. And like all of our parents and stuff, I'm sure that they give a major side eye to half of the things that we do think and say with regard to food now. They're like, it's fine. You know, my parents lived till whatever and they ate whatever, you know, it's like, that's just not really our culture. So I don't think you should feel silly at all, because it's like, you are enlightened to a whole new like reality, and that's good though. You know, that's actually that it helped you. So
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's true. That is true. And I definitely get people that, you know, parents and older family members and stuff that are like, what are you, collagen? What are you even talking about? And, but then they try it and, or they, you know, and honestly, it's one of those things where it's like the proof is in the pudding. Like after they saw the results that I had in my own body and with my own, just my own journey, it was like, oh, so this actually works, huh? Like now I have my aunt who I have been telling for years, like, I'm pretty sure you have a gluten intolerance. And she was just like, yeah, but nothing's worth giving up bread. Now she's like, okay, fine. I'm doing this thing because I can't live like this anymore. And I think that's what it takes, is you have to get to that pain point where it's like the pain of staying the same is worse than the pain of change. And yeah, I definitely got there. And then, like I said, my eyes were opened. It was the only thing that ever really worked. And it really wasn't hard. And I still enjoy, you know, I still am a food lover and I still enjoy some indulgences. And I'm not some crazy health nut that only eats kale or something.
Right.
you know, and so I think, yeah, I really felt like I needed to share what I had learned with the world. I knew that there had to be other people that were struggling with similar issues, and, you know, and I had these, I was diagnosed with PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. I was told by a lot of doctors I probably would never get pregnant. And if I did, it would be a long battle and really difficult. And I was able to get pregnant on my first try.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just think like, that never would have happened if I hadn't been taking care of my body in the right way. So
yeah. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm sure there's a lot of people who are now going to be like, okay, wait, what's her blog again? Let me
Root and Revel.
Yeah, you know, you hear a lot more women having complications with getting pregnant. So
yeah,
I'm sure that that's going to be a great inspiration for those out there who are not really realizing that maybe their diet could help them in some way.
That's awesome.
So what's been the most useful piece of advice that you've received thus far throughout your journey?
I would say by far the best piece of advice in the way I really try to think about food and life myself is add in more of the good and don't worry about the less, don't worry about the rest. I think people are so quick to feel like, okay, if I'm going to make changes, I got to cut out all this stuff. I got to go on a really restrictive diet. I've got to cut out grains and gluten and soy and sugar and this and that. And I just kind of found like, that's really no way to live your life unless you truly have a food allergy.
Yeah.
Instead, like just try to get in more of the good foods, more of the things that we know are good for us. So I didn't really focus on cutting out the bad, that it ends up happening, you know, by proxy because you're filling up on all these good things. You don't have time and room for the bad. But I just really focused on getting in more fruits and vegetables and whole grains and things like salmon. You know, good supplements. I focused on getting outside and walking every day and going to yoga and taking care of myself. And when I focused on those things and just doing more good, it was A, way easier to live my life and not feel like I was so deprived.
Right.
And it made the biggest difference because I don't really think health is about a diet, you know, a life of less. I think it's more thoughtful than that, and it's more about nourishing your body with good things.
Yeah, that makes sense. So talking about your body and treating your body well, is there anything that you do in your morning routine that maybe you feel like it sets you up for maybe having a successful or positive day?
Yeah, you know, it's hard for me to answer that question right now that I'm 9 months pregnant because my routine has gotten a little out of whack.
What did you do before?
Yeah, I know. I'm before like, what did I do before? I'm trying to remember. One of the things is drinking green smoothies. I didn't always necessarily do it first thing in the morning, but I often did do it for breakfast. And that was a really easy way to get in leafy greens and other fruits and vegetables in a delicious way and not really have to think about it. Right. So that, and then the more of those I drank, the more I started craving other healthier foods. Mm. So that was a really good way to kind of kickstart some healthy eating. There's also more lifestyle focused, this thing called the 5 minute, what is it called? 5 minute gratitude journal or something like that.
Yeah. 5 minute journal. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so a friend got this for me for my birthday, and even in the midst of this whole lifestyle, I was like, this is so cheesy. I'm not going to like journal every day. What is this? But finally I decided once, like, I got to give this a try. She gave me this. I haven't used it. I should just give it a shot. And I loved it so much. It was amazing how quickly it shifted my mood and that I just was in such a good mood for the rest of the day when I did it in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have definitely fallen out of the habit, but I was literally just thinking today that I need to get back into it and that it's something that I maybe even want to incorporate with our family and our kids that just taking time to be grateful, and think about the positive things you have in your life. I mean, sometimes it's like, I'm grateful for this cup of coffee in my hand right now. Like, it doesn't have to be this huge, meaningful thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like sometimes I just say, like I journal in the morning as well. And I do like three things I'm grateful for. And sometimes it's just like the sun being out, you know,
yeah.
Because when winter hits, like the sun's not always going to be out. So I'm grateful that it's out today. You know, it's sometimes a simple thing. So
yeah.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, totally. So I think that's a really good way to just get in a positive mindset. And I started noticing, like, I was just more grateful and happy throughout the day when I started doing it right. Like within the first week, I would just find myself being like, oh, that's so nice. Or, oh, this is, I'm so grateful for this now. Like you start noticing all the little things that you're grateful for. I'm grateful for air conditioning. How great is air conditioning right now? You know, like just little things, but it really does make a difference. So
yeah, having that attitude of gratitude for sure. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's never a bad thing to incorporate that in your day. Do you do any type of self-care indulgences like massages or facials or anything like that?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I probably get a massage, you know, once every month or two. So not anything crazy. I do go to the chiropractor every week, which is not quite the same, but makes a huge difference. I do a lot of self-care at home. Like I'm very big on taking baths at night and doing like face masks and stuff like that. But a lot of my self-care is things like the gratitude journal. I am really intense about my yoga practice and making sure that I make time for that every day or as much as I can. Sometimes it's not every day. But things that, you know, I have a dog. I really try to get outside with her every day, even if just for like a 10 to 15 minute walk. I live in Atlanta, so in the summer it's brutal. but yeah, I try to do it as much as I can. And yeah, I think self-care doesn't always have to be this like expensive or, you know, a big deal. It can be something as simple as I love crossword puzzles and they really calm my mind and I feel like make me feel very at peace. And so sometimes just like going and sitting out on my porch and doing a crossword puzzle is like, that's really good for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't do crossword puzzles, but I do Sudoku, or I don't know if I'm saying it right, but I do those and I love it as well. It's like, you know, you just kind of like zone out and just chill, and it requires you to think, but it's so much more relaxing than the normal thinking that I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And when you're doing it, you're just focusing on that one thing. You know, I find my brain is such a mess, you know, I always have a million different thoughts going at once. I think that's what I really like about yoga too, is that it's yoga and crossword puzzles and things like that. When I'm doing that, all I'm thinking about is the present moment and what I'm doing in that present moment. And, yeah, it is really good for my mental state and sanity.
Right. What would you say to someone who is dealing with trying to find their happy?
Go to therapy. I'm the biggest proponent of therapy. I think you don't have to have some traumatic childhood or, you know, panic attacks or any like major issues. I just think everybody really benefits from getting to know themselves a little bit better. I mean, sometimes just saying things out loud to a third party helps you figure out how you actually feel about something.
Right.
And I did start going to therapy last year? Yeah. I guess I've been going for probably like a year and a half now, very regularly. And it has made a huge difference in my life. And I think, the more that I've gone, the more I'm like, gosh, everybody needs to be in therapy because we all have our own issues. And yeah, that's been a really helpful thing for me. Definitely part of my self-care routine.
So my last question, what does success mean or look like for you?
Such a good question. And one I struggle with a lot.
Really?
Yeah, I have found, so when I first started the blog and I wasn't making a lot of money and I had taken a big pay cut from going from freelancing full-time to part-time, I started feeling really bad about myself and feeling like I realized how much of my identity was wrapped up in, like how much of my self-worth was wrapped up in my income. And when I really thought about it, you know, what does success mean to me? It was not how much money I'm making. And it's easy to use that because it's such a tangible measurement and where you can just say, well, I'm making $10 or I'm making $10,000. And that's easy to measure. But I think what I've realized over the last few years of trying to define what success is for me is that it's really about doing something that I'm passionate about and that energizes me, that's something that lights me up, and that helps somebody else. I feel like if at the end of the day I can feel good about how I spent my time, and that doesn't have to be even necessarily career related. You know, maybe it's I spent my time with my family today, or I spent my time taking care of myself today. You know, some days you just need a day where it's like, I went to yoga, I had brunch with girlfriends, I got a pedicure. I just feel nice and relaxed. And yeah, just, I don't know, I'm kind of babbling now, but.
No, that's it. That's what your definition is, your new reality of it is. So I can appreciate that for sure. So thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to chat with us, Kate, and just like allow us into your world and be very candid about your reality and what motivates you and just all these things that you've learned and implement in your life daily. I absolutely appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you so much. You had, like I said, so many good questions. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Now, before we go, make sure you let everyone know where they can find you, keep up with you, hang out with you, get in touch with you, all that good stuff.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. So Root and Revel is my blog. You can just go to rootandrevel.com. I'm also at Root and Revel on all social media platforms.
And Revel, like spelled out A-N-D.
Yes. Got it. Yes, exactly. And Revel, R-E-V as in Victor, E-L. Sometimes people think I'm saying rebel.
Yes, exactly. Clarified all this. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Root and Revel. And I offer one-on-one coaching for both health and wellness and also for business and blogging. So if anybody's interested in learning more that way, that's great. If not, you know, like you said, there's tons of free content on the blog, and hopefully you'll find something that resonates with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kate. And as always, you guys, keep killing it.